Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.
For better or worse, we've become accustomed to the idea that we are surveilled. Our phones track us, CCTV, cameras are everywhere. But if you don't carry your phone and you avoid cameras, can you still be fully private? Well, apparently not. That's according to our next guest. Felix Morsbach is a privacy and security researcher at Karlsruhe Institute of Technology. He joins me now. Felix, tell me a little bit about your work and your interests.
So over the past few years, we've been doing a bit of research in the area of privacy and smart cities. And what we mean by that is that in whatever we envision our future cities to look like, one thing is for certain, that there will be a lot more technology in it. That let it be traffic monitoring to suggest you the best route dynamically, or also just being about, let's say, occupancy tracking in a train to tell me which carriage I should board in for on a train ride to don't be crowded in the train.
Right.
And if we want to do that, there's like one easy way to do this. If we put video cameras everywhere and we can do all these calculations by applying some fancy models, doing some AI stuff or whatever you think, but it would require video cameras. And rightfully so, a lot of people don't think that this is a good idea because it would create a lot of privacy tension in our cities and we might want to be mostly anonymous if we walk through our cities.
Before you continue there, you know, yeah. I think everybody would love the benefits of being able to know which train carriage wasn't full and so on. But I wonder how many people fight against the presence of cameras to do a job like that. I mean, in Germany, do people really resist the installation of cameras? Because it feels like it's not something we talk about enough here in Ireland. And I know in the UK, they have more CCTV cameras per square foot than almost anywhere else in the world. Do we see a big fight against this inevitable installation of technology in our smart cities?
So at least for Germany, I would say yes. We see it like to a decent amount. So for example, a few years ago here in Karlsruhe, in the city where I live and work, we had the scenario that they wanted to place video cameras on one of our hotspots in the city to have like early response times for emergency services and law enforcement if there's like a fight breaking out or whatever. And there was a huge protest from civil rights organizations and also the population that said, yeah, but we don't want to be surveilled during the day. Like, we don't want to be put under, like, principal investigation all the time, which led to a lot of discussion about, like, could we achieve the same kind of utility? Like, we would call it a utility, like, emergency. Everybody wants to have, like, fast emergency response time. Like, no one talks about that. Like, no one argues against that. But do we really need to have video cameras for that? Which sparked a lot of interest in trying to propose alternative sensing technologies. Like, do we really need to have video cameras, or would there also, for example, be a thermal imaging camera? Would that be sufficient? That was the solution that was proposed a lot here in Karlsruhe, for example.
Oh, right. So a thermal imaging camera, you don't get to see people's faces. You just see thermal hotspots, and then you know if there's something happening, but you don't necessarily identify the people.
Exactly. This is the kind of reasoning that is behind that idea. And you can make the same argument with a lot of different other sensors. For example, you think about autonomous driving. A lot of people talk about LiDAR sensors, which is like a super fancy, cool new technology, which is very nice. But obviously, it's different to video cameras. So we expect that we cannot identify people with that. But if you think about what you actually need to identify someone, for example, you don't really need to see their faces. And I think you all know examples where you identified or recognized someone in public where you didn't really see their face. Imagine walking through the city and you see someone walking in front of you, like 100 meters in front of you or something. And you kind of know the person. You don't really know. You cannot see the face, but you know who that is. It might be an old friend or a colleague or someone.
Yeah.
Without knowing the face, without seeing the face, you see the way that he walks or the way that what his posture is, the physique of his body.
Yeah.
And you kind of already recognize him, right? So I guess everybody had this situation at one point. So this turns out that we can also, there's other features besides our faces, which make us very much identifying. And one promising one is the way we walk, what we would call gait recognition. And this you can do perfectly fine with thermal cameras. And so there's no trouble. I have no trouble identifying you on a thermal imaging if I have a gait recognition system.
Right. Okay. So thermal doesn't give you privacy. LiDAR presumably is very similar because that gives high accuracy and high resolution imagery, right?
Yeah, LiDAR is even worse. LiDAR is even worse, like in terms of privacy, let's say. Yeah.
So, but Wi-Fi isn't you know, there's no real imagery in Wi-Fi. We're talking about radio signals, but your work looked into whether or not you could identify someone just by having Wi-Fi in the room. Talk me through what you found.
Yeah, exactly. So seeing all these claims made from industry and also academia alike saying, yeah, I have this new cool system and this is privacy preserving and I can do all this nice shit, but without actually having the privacy, infringing any kind of privacy. And we know that for certain examples, this is definitely not true. So we said, okay, let's maybe test whether this holds for all the things. So we built a small setup, did a study where we invited a bunch of people and recorded them with a very vast array of sensors. So there were thermal cameras, radar, depth cameras, LiDAR, and all the things that you can think of. And also one of them would be Wi-Fi. And as you rightfully said, so like Wi-Fi, what does this really mean, like Wi-Fi sensing? And turns out I can identify you based on how your body interacts with the Wi-Fi signal.
What?
Yes. It sounds scary, and it's a bit scary, and it's a bit crazy, but let me walk you through how this works. So what we mean by Wi-Fi sensing is not that we say we identify the phone that you're carrying or something. Like this is really trivial, right? If I see the phone in your pocket and I know that it's connecting to my Wi-Fi, I know that you're in the proximity.
Yeah.
But if you think about how wireless communication works on a very, very abstract level, it's a sender sending out some electromagnetic wave to a receiver, which then the sender is encoding some kind of information based by altering the signal slightly, like shifting the amplitude or something like this. But as soon as physics being physics, as the electromagnetic wave passes through any kind of matter, it changes. Like it's changing a little bit. And this happens independent of what kind of matter it passes through, but it happens differently enough and differently in intensity depending on what it passes through. So what the receiver then does is trying to correct for this error, what we would call it, he calculates the error and trying to estimate what the signal actually looked like when it left the sender's device. And this works fine. Like, you know that you can still have Wi-Fi connection through a concrete wall. It might not be as great, but it works to some extent. And what we are interested in is this specific error term, like this idea that what the receiver calculates on what I need to change to the signal that I receive to actually reconstruct the original signal. And this is called error correction, and this is like very old, has been done for decades now. It's nothing special. The thing is that depending on what kind of matter this signal passes through, this error term looks differently. If my wave passes through a concrete wall, it will have a different error term than whether it passes through a wooden desk or a human body.
I can see where this is
and
going. Yeah. So you have this system of sending and sort of receiving of two devices, and anything that passes in their way, it's kind of like the transit method of how we identify planets or exoplanets against a star. That there's a sort of a wobble in the signal that comes as the planet is passing through the light of the star, that we infer the presence of a star. You're inferring the shape of a person based on the zeros and ones that are bouncing back and forth between a Wi-Fi receiver or transmitter and another device in the room?
In essence, that's correct, yeah. No, not correctly, but like, not exactly, but like the essence, yeah. Yeah, exactly. We're detecting the change that happens to the signal. Yeah.
So if I... But, I mean, you'd have to have quite a lot of resolution to identify a person, though, would you? Or is there a lot of this information that's going back and forth that you can actually you can actually see the shape or like, is it the shape of a human or is it a gait or is it just what sort of information do you get that you say, oh, that's Johnny and that's Jane?
You are absolutely correct. Like, you don't have to imagine like it's being a number or something, but like a very, very high dimensional vector of like a lot of information. And what this information actually is, I don't really know, to be honest, because I'm a privacy researcher. I'm not a signal person. Like, if you would talk to someone who's doing like Wi-Fi engineering, they would probably be able to explain to you way better what this actually represents.
Yeah.
But the scary thing is that I don't need to know what this actually is. The thing is, we don't really reconstruct like a specific, let's say, image or something. I mean, it's a nice analogy to think about, to see that we have an image of someone, but this is not really what we have. We may more have like, we have a bunch of random numbers, which we know that this corresponds to the error signature that was Aiden or Felix or Julian or whatever. And then I can see whether I have the same kind of signature again and link this back to the previous recording that we have already.
Wow. So if I was able to hack into the Wi-Fi in the White House, I'd be able to tell when Donald Trump was in the room and when he wasn't.
If you have sufficient, like, you need to have like some kind of label data where you know, like, if you know for a certain point in time that he's there. For example, if he's, I don't know, like signing something.
Yeah.
And then you have another point in time where you don't know. And then you compare the signatures. This is the current, the general idea of like recognizing or what we would call identity linkage. And so, this is the same idea how also like face recognition works. You need to have like a gallery entry where you know the label and then you match it to someone where you don't have the label.
Right, right. But in the case of a room where the Wi-Fi, you know, transmitter or the signal is bouncing around and presumably it's bouncing off moving devices like a mobile phone or other devices connected to it, is it possible if there's that many devices moving around a room that you can get a clean signal from, or were your test environments just a single Wi-Fi device and a single receiver?
Yeah, so I think I need to go a bit more in depth for that. There are like two different kinds of Wi-Fi sensing on a high level. The one that has been done like for also like 10 years, so this is not something that we invented, it's called CSI-based sensing, where you basically do this only on the receiving side. So you have the sender sending the signal, and then on the receiver side, you do this error calculation, and you basically see a vision of like the line of sight between those two things, right? And if it's moving, you always have like a line of sight kind of information.
Yes.
And then what we did in our paper is that we did not invent Wi-Fi sensing, but we said like one of the previous Wi-Fi standards which got released, they introduced this thing called beamforming. And beamforming is a concept or like a technique where the Wi-Fi sender tries to focus the signal into a specific direction where the device is supposed to be. And this is done to improve quality of like transmission and speeds and whatever. But for this to work, the sender needs to know where the device is.
Right. So that's how you get that what sort of richer picture, because the idea is if you're in the room and the Wi-Fi is trying to communicate your phone, if the Wi-Fi knows your phone is over here, it'll point most of its energy in that particular direction. You get a better signal. But by doing that, your phone has to tell it where it is. And that gives a much richer 3D picture of where things are in the room, as opposed to just having Wi-Fi that's pushing out. And that's really, really interesting. I mean, does this pose a genuine security risk in terms of you know, if I was able to get the profile of Donald Trump, for example, and I was able to hack, you know, Mar-a-Lago or one of these places, you know, is there a risk that this might be used to identify targets or identify people?
So in theory, yes. In reality, I, and as much as I would like to say, yeah, please fund me for like fixing this, I have to be like, if I'm being a bit more serious, in theory, it would work. In practice, there are so many more easy ways to surveil than using this technology. Okay. Yeah. So while you could do this and spend a lot of money on doing this, and after we published this paper, we got reached out by certain players.
What does that mean?
On like an economical level, it's more economically to do this in a different way.
Right.
Like there were some interest from industry to build like surveillance products based on this.
Okay, I see. So you're basically saying spies got in touch to ask if you would share your data, and they would give you money so they could make spy stuff.
No, not really like that.
That's what I would say if I were not trying to give that information away.
Yeah, you know, if I would tell you if I...
Exactly, if that's right. That's exactly it. Yeah. Wow, this is really interesting. But just from a technical point of view, it's interesting to think that, you know, the idea of, you know, privacy, of being surveilled, of having a device in a room, and you think, well, I don't want cameras in here. But actually, it doesn't really matter what sort of device is there. People can identify you. But I suppose with Wi-Fi, they won't be able to tell... You know, they won't be able to tell your behaviors necessarily. That, you know, they won't be able to tell if you're angry or cross or, you know, video does give us a really rich picture of what happens in a room. And often, you know, when it comes to what really matters, you know, acts of violence or whatever, that having that video is so much richer, I suppose, and more damning than other devices. But interesting to understand how these technologies can be exploited in different ways. Thank you so much for joining us, Felix Moisbach.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.